So this is the Happy House Hunters Mastermind, where we're just troubleshooting and talking with some of our members. And I was just sharing that I have a move out that I knew was trashing one of my units, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And so I had the conversation with my maintenance person that I really needed to get them out of there. And it was one of those things where, you know, you hear all the horror stories. And so you're thinking, okay, are they going to drag their feet? Are they going to trash the place on their way out? Are they going to, you know, rip out light fixtures and take doors and take appliances, you know, because you hear those kind of stories when somebody gets mad at the landlord. And so I thought, you know, it'd be better if it were their idea to move on instead of my idea for them to move on. And so it actually worked out, because they decided to move on. So I did not have to pressure them to do that. And I got my property back without having to file evictions and go to court and do anything like that. But now I do have the property to rehab, and it's okay. It's okay, because the good news for me, the win-win, is that I don't have to do any kind of a legal battle to get them to move on, because they did that on their own. So I'm quite happy with that. And of course, you know, they don't want to tell me where they moved to, because I'm sure their fear is that I'm going to invoice them, you know, for the new carpet. Now, what they may or may not know is that when we bought this, it was a duplex, up and down duplex, and they were on the bottom floor. When we bought this building, it had a really high grade of Berber carpeting in it. And the lady that had lived there was the mother of the owners of the property, and she passed away. And then they just decided they didn't want to be landlords. They kind of had the property for her. And so the good news is the carpet was in such great shape when we bought it that we have rented that unit, I'm going to say, just off the top of my head, at least 4 different times. And we've not had to replace carpet. So I got my money's worth out of that one, of that carpet. So I'm not even terribly upset that I have to replace the carpet this time, because the last time when they moved in, you know, Berber gets runs in it. I don't know if you're familiar with Berber carpeting, but it wears well, except if you catch it with a sweeper or with something, it will run right across the room. And it did have a couple of runs, but they were strategically kind of along a wall, you know, where people would put their furniture anyway. And so we would just clean it. We would steam it and re-rent it. And the last time when this couple moved in, I debated then, probably should have gone with new carpet, but we're going to rent it one more time. And thank God I did that, because they have totally trashed the carpet. So I would be doing new carpet then and again now, had I put new carpet in then. So it worked out, and I'm not, you know, I'm not even upset that I have to do new carpet this time, because I almost did it last time. And so anyway, it's just not good timing, but there's never a good time to have an empty unit. So on one hand, I want to say it's not a good time to have an empty unit right at Christmas time going into winter. But then again, maybe it's the best time to have an empty unit, because you know, folks don't like to move at Christmas time. They don't like to move in the winter. They don't like to move, especially during the holidays. And so this might be the best time to have it down and to get it rehabbed. So I'm just getting all my ducks in a row, getting everything lined up. We have to get the carpet taken out, and it is so dirty that nobody really wants to do that job. So I just had a conversation with Mark. I said, you know, we might be taking this carpet out ourselves. I do have the new carpet already lined up. I have my appointment to go pick out my colors of what she has in stock. And we already have a date for that. We already have a date for the open house. We already have a date on when the unit's going to be available. I already have my painter lined up, my cleaning crew lined up. So the only thing I have to do is get that old carpet out of there. And, you know, nobody wants to do it because it's a dirty job. So anyway, so Mark and I may have to do that one ourselves, which is okay. Not ideal, but okay. So that's where we're at. I would like to start, and Elise, are you at a spot where you can chat for a minute? I would like to start with you, Elise, and what issues are you having currently that you would like to share, either successes or concerns that you'd like to share?
Yeah, of course. So right now, my biggest thing is actually just being able to prepare this property for me to move out. I have just kind of found a new spot in my life and really started to want to build, like, you know, my family and everything like that. And this isn't the perfect place for it. However, I'm looking to just kind of learn how to leverage this property to get my next, because in essence, I have just adopted an entirely freestyle life. I mean, everything that I'm doing is from home at this point. The most that I've done manually really is I worked at a warehouse for a couple weeks just because I was on upshift and I just needed a little quick money. And I hated it. I hate manual labor. I do. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not built for that. And that's perfectly okay. Like, that was never something that I saw myself doing, but it was good in that time. So right now,
and it's good to know that in Central Ohio, you always have that in your back pocket if you ever had to pick up some cash.
Absolutely.
It's always available. Yeah.
And that was one of the things I was just like, you know, if anything, it's like the beauty of upshift is that I could really go in there. And if I didn't like the job, it's not like I had too much into it. It's just like a temp service. I just don't go back, you know? So with that, any issues that I've had in here, really it's, I'm learning that because the house was older and the contractor that I used, he was not the greatest. And I'm just starting to see some of that shoddy work starting to fall apart within that, not even year time frame that he finished it. So just kind of understanding that and needing to make sure that I'm like keeping up with anything on the house. What else? I need to look into a structural engineer, because when I bought the house, we knew that there was kind of not like a foundation issue, but it had been repaired before. And now that I'm seeing it, there's the crack that's in the house. And I know David had came over to help me with one of the light fixtures. And he was just looking at that like, I want to kind of get that looked at. And I've been keeping a close eye on it and measuring it like every month, make sure it's not like going quickly. And I haven't seen any major change, but that was one of the things that I'm like, okay, I should probably get that fixed before I put anyone else in here, because it's on both sides. And on the other side, it looks a little uglier, but the men who are in there don't really care. And every time I go in for inspection, nothing has changed. They haven't touched it. It's good. So I haven't been super worried about it.
Now, is this in your basement?
The crack is the basement. Yes, I can see it in the concrete. And I can also see a little bit where it's bowing. And this was seen in the inspection, and my inspector said it was okay. It wasn't like a crazy bow. It was something I was going to have to take care of later. So I've seen that a little bit more prevalently. And then the actual crack that you can see, I remember you had been here, and when you walk in, and it's kind of like the family room den area, it's just where the house separates, and it's legitimately right where that, where the garage kind of starts, and that's the separate portion of the house, and it's on both sides that is kind of just like drifting away from the house. So that's something we're looking at.
Okay. Yeah, again, I don't know if you don't see very much movement, I don't know that I would get into overkill. Some companies will come in and give you some sort of estimates that are maybe a little through the ceiling cost-wise. So my best advice would be, when you're ready to go forward with something like that, is to get at least three estimates, so that you get three different perspectives on what the fix should be.
Okay.
And you'll get a feel as your guys come through. You'll get a feel who is really trying to solve your issue without gouging you for price.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would get at least three estimates on that.
Okay. Hold on. I actually have it. I'm trying to flip this puppy. If I can flip it, that would be great. Yes! Okay. So yeah, it's just like this crack in the wall, and it just goes up and through.
And it's just back here in this back area, but we also had to completely rebuild this wall back here.
Okay. But I remember that now. Yeah. And you put the window in.
Mm-hmm. And I went through and I was looking outside the other day and I could just see where there's like a portion out here that was just kind of bowing too. And I noticed that. So it's looking like I'm going to have to go back in and, you know, get the whole thing repaired again. But that's what I was saying. I don't know how urgent it is or whatever, because everything else is going very well.
Yeah, it doesn't look real urgent to me, just off the top, just my opinion, of course.
Yeah, and, of course.
But again, keep an eye on it. But do you have a house already picked out that you want to move to so that you can turn both sides into a rental?
I have not. I've been speaking with my boyfriend and just kind of how like we wanted to play this. And he's like, you know, if you were wanting to do something like that, he lives in an apartment right now. And I told him, I was like, you know, apartment living's not for me. You know, I love you, but we're not doing this. And
I get it. And, especially when you've got your own place.
And to move a 2-bedroom house into a 1-bedroom apartment with 2 dogs does not sound, you know, inviting. So, you know, and he's all for it. He's supportive. He's like, I listened to a real estate podcast and they were talking about whatever, explain this to me. So that's great to have that support system. But yes. I just kind of want to have an idea of how to leverage first before I go picking out a house and then get my hopes crushed.
Well, I think the first thing would be to find out how much equity you have in the house that you're in versus how much savings you have that you want to put into a new investment, because your first concern is, do you have the down payment? And if, as long as you're working and he's working and you're as young as you are, you can certainly just, you know, let somebody else, you know, use somebody else's money, you know, borrow on an FHA or, you know, something along that line where you can get the lowest down payment with the lowest possible monthly rent and into like a 30-year note to go on to your house. I'll call it the house of your dreams. Now, again, I'm not saying that may be your end move. You might decide, you know, 10 years from now to even upgrade from there, but to get the house that you both want now. And keep the price as low as, you know, keep your monthly cost as low as possible, because you can always double up if you wanted to pay it off sooner. But if you take a 10-year note or a 15-year note, you can't, if an emergency comes along, you can't reduce your payment. So I would get it as low a payment as possible and as low a down payment as possible. Keep as much cash for emergencies because you never know. You just try to be prepared. But then you can always, you know, if you want to double up your payments and make more payments, you certainly can do that. And you can turn a 30-year note into a 15-year note by making a couple of big extra payments a year. And so the way I like to do it is I like to take the PITI, the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And let's say that you get an FHA loan and your PITI is $1,200. I like to take 2 payments full, like 2,400, and then just divide that by your 12 months and then send a whole separate check in when you make your mortgage payment, is make this the one that comes with your mortgage and then make a separate payment with that additional amount. And in your memo line, write apply 100% to principal. And so what's happening when you get a loan is your first, and again, I use the $1,200 number, the first PITI, as you send that payment in, when you look at an amortization schedule, you're paying mostly interest the first half of your loan, and you're really knocking down principal the second half of your loan. So if it's a 30-year note, the whole first 15 years is you're paying a lot of interest. The second 15 years, you're really bringing down the principal. Okay. When you send that extra payment in, every month and you say apply to principal only, you see what's happening. See, as you're knocking that principal down, that you're paying interest on that regular payment. So all of a sudden you're turning a 30-year note into about a 15-year note.
Okay. Well, does that make sense? Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I've always wondered what that, you know, principal is. And It's like I had the idea, but I didn't know that like you could actually, you know, step in and do that. And I'm more than okay with that. And I guess my next question would be, with leveraging and having the down payment, if I wanted to like do a cash out refinance or something and, you know, get the down payment for the next one, or try and use, how could I use this one really?
I would probably get a line of credit against the one you're in.
Okay.
And what's going to happen is that's going to show up as a second mortgage on that house. Okay. But the first objective is you have to find out how much equity that you have in the one that you're in. I don't know exactly what properties have done in your area right there. I don't know, because you've been in it how long now?
I've been in it since March.
Okay. I don't know how much equity you have. So the downside is it's going to cost you the cost of an appraisal to find out what the current value is versus your payoff. Uh-huh. And again, then you'd be allowed to borrow a certain percent of that depending on the note. I'm thinking 75 to 80% of it, of the equity that you could borrow.
Got it.
And use that as a down payment. Or if you had some savings that you wanted to use and not get a second note on the house that you're in, that way the house that you're in would come, once you had it rented and you moved on, it would probably cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So it depends. It depends how you want to do that. But keep in mind, if the house, because the one that you're in, you have an FHA on it. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so you're so close. This coming March will be a year.
And actually, I bought it in November, technically.
I'm sorry?
I technically bought it in November.
Okay. So you're already past your year.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be eligible to get out of your FHA loan on that one, which means you would, and this is where you could pull your cash out and not have a second mortgage. You could refinance the one that you're in over to a traditional, and you might have enough equity that they'll use it as your down payment, as your 20%. And what that does is that gives you your FHA availability back again for a new purchase. And so again, you'd have to get an appraisal. That's going to be your cost. But a lot of lenders will do that, especially the lender that you're currently with. They might be interested in refining for you because they don't want to lose you as a customer. And all you're doing is you're changing your FHA loan over into a conventional loan so that you can use your FHA money again and purchase the home that you want to live in under the FHA.
Yeah. Okay.
And what you can do when you refinance the one you're in, you know, depending on what the appraisal says it's worth, you could pull some cash out at that time if you wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, definitely. Well, that's definitely something that I'm interested in. I want to get my new house or next house. And I was like, well, if I have to move everything most of my stuff into storage so that we can get this other side re-rented, because there's really nothing wrong with the side besides me having to have a punch list from everything that just needed upgraded or just touched. It's ready to go. So
now, if I could make a suggestion, and this is another form of house hacking, if you're not interested in doing another duplex, you want more of a traditional standard one family home. If it were me, I might look for something that has what they call a mother-in-law suite.
Mm-hmm.
Bear with me. If you could find a house that has a separate, like a back entrance that comes directly into, you know, another where you could somehow divide it, not make it a duplex, keep it a single family, but something that might have a little mother-in-law suite. As long as you live in it, you can actually short-term rent the mother-in-law suite. And that is incredibly lucrative income-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, put the mother-in-law suite out on an Airbnb. And the good news is this, you can do it as long as you want. And let's say you start a family and you no longer want to do it. All you have to do is stop.
Yeah.
And now you've got that space to use for your family. But it's a great way early on, if you have a house that has a little mother-in-law suite option to it, whether it's a finished unit in the basement or it's a, you know, just a separate bedroom and full bath, you know, downstairs in the back of the house that's got its own entrance or whatever. However, that's laid out. If you find something that has a mother, or sometimes people put a unit over their garage, or, you know, so if you found something that had a little mother-in-law suite, even though it's zoned for single family, you could rent out that mother-in-law suite on an Airbnb. And I'll use Airbnb term. It's a short-term rental. It doesn't have to be on the Airbnb platform. But the point is that it's very, very lucrative. And when it's at your primary residence, it's pretty easy, especially when you're working from home, it's pretty easy for you to do the flip. So you don't have to pay somebody to do that in between your guest. And all of a sudden you can generate another $1,000 a month. Easy.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay.
But if you ever didn't want to do it, you just stop.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely get that. And, you know, all of these are great options. It's really just a one, you know, a fear type of thing. And it's always just been a fear for me that, you know, I could make a mistake and get all of it taken away from me. So that's always something that I'm like, whew. But it's kind of just not knowing and not knowing how to just go for it and try.
Well, in the defense of building your portfolio, there's always good, better, and best. I don't think you can go wrong, because if you look at the statistics, Columbus, Ohio is growing by leaps and bounds. When you look at the projections, they're going to need so much more housing coming up in the next few months, which they don't have. You're starting to see whole apartment buildings, you know, go up now that we didn't see for a while. That construction is now started again. I mean, there was a time that every field had new rooftops in it, and we're starting to see some of that again because the housing demand is there. So if you can, you know, buy your, I'll call it again, your dream home, and use the other half of the duplex that you're in as a rental, I don't think you're going to have any trouble keeping that rented. Your duplex, it's in a great location. It's in great shape. And I just don't think that you're going to ever have trouble having that rented. And so again, I think it's going to cash flow very well for you, which is just going to add to your bottom line. And then if you can buy a single family, like I said, that has a little mother-in-law suite or something that you could, a fourth bedroom or an area that you could Airbnb, all of a sudden you could generate, you know, $1,000 into your pocket off of your duplex and another $1,000 off of a little mother-in-law suite of a single family. And you could virtually put another couple grand a month into your income budget.
Which I am definitely okay with. So I will, that's one of the things I said, just mentally, I was going to take this week and maybe a little bit of next week just to, you know, recharge, just because I have been doing so much and like running clubs and trying to freestyle live and, you know, all the above. So just take a little break. And then once I come back kind of from that recharge to really step into that knowledge and trying to figure out what the next move is going to be, just to make sure that I'm pocketing the most income that I can while doing it in a way that's like, you know, sustainable and safe. Yes.
And the thing that you have in your corner that I don't have, that you do have, is time. So again, when you make a deal, you know, we're always thinking, okay, what's the best deal? There's always good, better, and best when it comes to real estate. And the only difference between a bad deal and a good deal sometimes is time. I can overpay for something, but if I can sit on it long enough, it'll eventually cash flow because of the appreciation rate and the rent income goes up and the mortgage goes down. And so over time, I can turn a bad deal into a good deal over time. And so for you, even though you want to make the best deal out there, if you just make a good deal, it's still going to turn out to be really good for you because you have time for that property to appreciate as you're paying the mortgage down, and you're going to start getting value in that property just over time.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
So, well, yeah. So again, I do your due diligence, you know, make sure that it's a good property to the best of your ability, but I think you're in a great spot. Yeah. I think you're in a great spot to take the next step. I love it. How exciting.
I'm super excited. And I really do appreciate, the mastermind in you, and especially Tammy, because Tammy and Andorra be hearing all of it. They're like, listen, you've got.
Oh, good.
It's really just been like that support system has just really been amazing for me. And, you know, who would have thought that, I mean, I said that I want to start real estate probably 3 years ago. So 2 years before I bought this house, and then just going into it, and I'm looking at it like, you know, 2022, it's time to buy the next one. So what are we going to do now? And it's just amazing to have that support system and just, you know, have everyone to talk to. So thank you.
I love it. I love it. And that was my hope, is that, you know, the group does come together as a mastermind, and we do encourage folks to get in touch with each other outside of the group, you know, with each other, and be that support. And and I've been there, and I know Tammy's been there for Adrian, and I've been there for Adrian as well. Trying to get him across the finish line to actually get to get his first tenant. And I think he's a little afraid. So he's dragging his feet a little bit because he wants to make sure he gets the perfect one. And we all know that, you know, tenants are going to come and go. And the perfect one
is the one that pays on time, even though my tenants have been a little wacky with that. We finally did get that payment, by the way. That was a success.
So. Good. And so again, we're trying to encourage him to take that step. And I think he wants to make sure he does it right. And he's afraid to cross that finish line a little bit. But it's, you know, you have to learn. And again, real estate is all about good, better, and best. So there's going to be a good tenant. There's going to always be a better tenant. There's going to be that best tenant. And so all you can do is do your best with the information you have at the time. And so anyway, it sounds like you're doing well, and don't hesitate to ask questions, which I don't think you do. I think you are asking and moving forward, and I love it. And so for as young as you are, wow, I love it. I love everything about it. So good for you. Yeah. Kudos to Elise. I'm going to give her a little heart up here. So I'll mark my reaction and celebrate. And a thumbs up.
Oh my goodness.
So anyway, perfect. All right, Tammy, so tell us about your recent deal that you decided. Give us just a brief background.
Well, first off, I wanted to kind of reply to Elise. We're at about the same place that you are. We're trying to figure out how to do our next deal and how to leverage what we already have and not run out of cash so that we can keep doing deals. So we're in a similar place, and we are doing a cash out refinance on one of our properties right now. So here's a couple of things. One, it's very, very difficult to find an appraiser right now. So for the cash out refinance loan, we went through three different appraisal companies before we finally found someone who could get an appraiser out there. The appraiser finally came out 2 weeks after our original closing date was supposed to happen, but he finally showed up. And they're very tough right now. So this is one of my problems. I'm trying to cash out refinance a house that we bought, and then we put $30,000 into it for a roof and a windows, and then the appraisal came in at $5,000 less than we originally purchased the house for, and we've only owned the house since January of this year. So it came in very low, which means I'm getting less cash out than I really wanted to get out. So yes, I will have equity, and like Kathy says, eventually that's going to turn around and somebody else down the road can appraise the property at a higher value, or it'll be worth more, even if I don't get an appraiser. But for right now, that $20,000 loss of, you know, technically it's not really a loss, but it feels like a loss of income because I spent money on it. So that's hurting us. And then we also are in contract on another property that we put an offer in on. And after three appraisal companies, finally found an appraiser to come out and appraise this house. And he appraised it at $30,000 less than we offered on it. So, and in addition, we were buying it, we thought, at a decent price, and it needed $40,000 worth of siding and roof put on it. And he came in and appraised it at $30,000 less than we're currently in contract for.
So that number just keeps getting further and further apart.
Yes. So, you know, now basically our equity in our properties would be $50,000 loss already just with that information. And then we would be taking on two new loans. So for my four properties, now suddenly I will have four loans. Currently for my three properties, I only have two. So it's kind of putting us in a bind. So that is one thing I was kind of asking Kathy before we got on here, is how do you analyze your portfolio to make sure that it's moving in the right direction? I understand that sometimes your rents are going to go up or they're going to go down based on your new purchases, mm-hmm. and your equity is going to change. But in this case, taking on two loans at once to finance a property that came in way below the appraiser came in way below the offer, just, it feels like now our cash flow is going to drop and our equity is going to drop. So it doesn't feel like a good deal to us.
I agree. This one probably is not, because of the fact that the appraisals came in low. Now, the way appraisals have been coming, they've been coming in high enough that folks have been getting what they've been asking for these properties. And so I don't know if we're just starting to see the whole market, tighten up, soften up, the values starting to come down, maybe closer to where they should be. Because there always has to be that an adjustment phase. You know, when things go up, that's when you can sometimes grab a great property for a price that you can't believe that's all they're asking for it, because the seller hasn't caught up with what the market's really doing. And then on the other side, when the property has a downturn and you have some sellers that are still asking way up here and the market is now down here, which is kind of where we are now, things have started to come back in line. And so some of these sellers, see, they were used to getting those really high prices. And so the realtors are out there going, no, you can get that. But the appraisers, see, are coming in less. And so, again, when you're doing investment properties, I think you have the opportunity not to get emotionally attached to a property. When you're trying to buy the home that you live in, and this is a good lesson for Elise, since she's thinking about looking for that perfect home to move into, is that you have to be careful to not get emotionally connected to that property, even though you're saying to yourself, this is where I want to live, it's the perfect location. And all of a sudden, when you get emotionally attached to it, you start doing things that maybe you shouldn't do. You start borrowing more money than you should and making up the difference when an appraisal comes in too low, and all kinds of things that isn't good financially. And so this is probably a good example, Tammy, on where you probably should let this one not go to the closing table, because the gap is starting to just get too big between the low appraisal value and the repairs that you discovered had to be done. For your purchase price of $170,000, which is what you went into contract under, that house would have to be pretty close to being move-in ready for me. Because again, I would have felt that was pretty much its value. And now with the appraiser coming in $30,000 less, I certainly wouldn't want to put another $20,000 into roof and siding when the appraisal is telling us that it's not even worth, you know, the initial purchase price. So this I think the gap's getting too big there.
I agree. We think that, but we've also, we were supposed to close on it by the beginning of December. And so it just keeps getting drug out. And I'm ready to give up on it, but David's not quite there yet. So we'll have to give him another day or so to figure that out, because we have 3 days to cancel the contract based on our appraisal.
Now, is his thinking that he wants to make up that $30,000 and still buy that particular house?
No, his problem is that it's probably a good deal. I mean, it's still a really nice house and a really nice location. And I think that once it gets fixed up, we think it would definitely be worth $200,000. So that seems like, you know, we could probably do it, but I think he's mostly feeling guilty that it's drug on this long and that he feels like he owes the seller something. We didn't put any kind of earnest money down or anything, so we could just walk away with nothing and then the seller's got to start all over again. So being the nice guy, he's feeling guilty.
I know. And because he's a nice guy, that's to his detriment at this point, because remember, the seller, they still have their house. You know, you didn't take anything away from them. They still have everything they had when you started. The problem that they have now, and this doesn't have anything to do with you, is the fact that that appraiser came in $30,000 less. And so that appraisal could stick with that house for a minute and cause them a problem. But again, you didn't do that. You know, you were willing to pay the 170 as long as their house would appraise for the 170. It was their house that came in short, not you.
Right. So I think this house has been on the market for probably close to a year. And originally his asking price was 250, which is ridiculous. He was just trying to take advantage of the hot market. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when we originally went into contract, it was 179. And then due to some things that were found during the inspection, we talked him down to 169. So David said, well, already he's gone way lower than his original asking price. And I thought, well, that's not really our problem.
It really isn't, because his house isn't measuring up. According to this appraiser, his house isn't measuring up to his ticket, to his purchase price.
So this was an odd thing. My appraisal has a subject to in it. My appraisal before the loan will now close, even if we wanted to go forward, he said the paint on the outside is flaking, which we already knew, which is why we were going to cite it. And the roof is bad, which we already knew. So we already were going to put a roof on it. But since he saw water spots on the ceiling, now it's contingent upon us having an additional inspection for that, because he's afraid it's mold and water damage. And a lead inspection for the outside of the house, because the paint's so bad. So I've never heard of an appraisal being contingent on additional inspections.
Wow, if it's determined that that's lead paint, that could really even decrease your value even more, because now you can only use certain contractors to remedy that issue.
That's why we were going to just put siding over it, hide it all, not flake any of it off and be done with it.
Right, right. But again, that's at your cost. And I think this probably is not the deal for you. Now, what might happen, because the seller has already come down from 250 down to 169, with this latest appraisal, what might happen is that seller might even have to readjust their asking price. And it could be something that you totally disconnect yourself from this offer and If it's still on the market or goes back on the market at a much lower rate, you could always enter into another contract. But as far as David, he's being a nice guy. It really isn't his fault that any of this happened. And I get that. He's feeling that he's tied the seller up. But the reality of the situation is the seller has tied himself up, because why was it not disclosed that it needed a new roof and that there was water damage and that sort of thing? Because that wasn't something you were prepared for when you first went into contract. Am I correct?
Not when we first went into contract. And even when we sent our contractor out to give us an estimate, the seller insisted that the roof has been repaired and didn't need replaced. But we just decided we were going to just replace it while we had the contractor out there, just to be done with it for the next 15 or 20 years and not have to worry about roof leaks later on.
So I think I would probably cut my losses on that one. I think there's probably a better deal out there. Again, that's just my opinion.
So when we ran the numbers, you know, this will be our fourth purchase. We ran the numbers and we saw that this new property, it's called Wheeling Street. Wheeling Street was going to cash flow $200 a door, which for us is good.
With
a mortgage. And then we have to do a cash out refi on our Broad Street property so that we had the money for the down payment and the rehab. And Broad Street was cash flowing, I don't remember, $2,000 a month, but with the mortgage, it's only going to cash flow $800 a month. It was cash flowing $1,700. Now it's going to cash flow $800 a month. So this is where I was asking you, like, how do you compare these, the whole portfolio? Overall, it looks good because Broad Street's still cash flowing $800 for three doors. And Wheeling Street's going to cash flow $200 a door. It seems like things are still going to be good. But then when we started looking at our portfolios as a whole, we realized, wow, the mortgages that we're taking on and the closing costs for the loan are really eating into the equity way more than we realized when we only did the analysis on each door.
Well, I think you have to really look at your overall portfolio every time. Because if you're going to pull cash out of other properties, you have to consider all of that in your overall strategy. So I look at my portfolio overall every single time I look at a deal. I look at what it's going to do to the whole thing, as to whether I even want to take out that kind of a note. And I think what got you on this one was not only did the appraisal come in too low, is that you had to put too much money into this one for what you were paying for it to begin with, with the roof and the siding. And it looks like your appraiser is agreeing with you that those things need done, if he's making his appraisal contingent upon those things. So it looks like he's agreeing with you. That seller has some hard decisions to make. I think your decision to not buy that one, even though it's a great location, is a sound one. Now, if you wanted to buy it for the home to live in, you know what I'm saying? If you're saying this is our dream house, this is the perfect location, this is where we want to be, I don't think it's bad to overpay when it's the property that you want to live in and it's the location you want to live in. But as an investment property, you can't get emotionally connected to those investment properties. And I just don't think this one's the best. Again, there's always good, better, and best. Will this one be good over time? This one would be good over time if you had the time. You know, over a 30-year note, it would be good at some point. It'll turn the corner and be a good deal.
Sure. In 15 years, it'll be a great deal.
Yeah. So it just depends on what your final objective is for where you are right now. I know for me and Mark, we want something that's going to cash flow profit, not just cash flow to cover its own expenses. We want something to generate a profit the moment we're into the deal. It has to be able to generate a profit because of where we are in our lives, you know, because we're at retirement age and this is our income. Again, when I bought my first salon building, all I cared about was that it covered its own cost. It didn't have to cash flow a profit. It just had to cover its own cost. And so basically my staff bought me a building over a 30-year period. And then once it was paid off, it then became income for me once the mortgage was paid off. So again, it makes a difference on where you are in life. And see, that's why with Elise, if she's looking for that, I'll call it that dream home, that she wants to move into, she could afford at 26 to overpay for that, knowing that she's got 30 years for that property to turn the corner. And at some point, she could even move on and make that one an investment property, and it would still be a good deal for her. But I don't know, you and David, you're right at that place where, you know, it just depends on how important the cash flow is and how soon you need it to come into the household versus just making investments, you know, because real estate's a long game.
Right. We're closer to the wanting cash flow end of it, but I understand that, you know, the appreciation and is going to be a icing on top of the cake.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say you actually analyze your property, your portfolio as a whole, do you have tools that help you do that? Do you have a spreadsheet that you use, or?
I have everything on an Excel spreadsheet, and because we bought and sold here recently, you know, we sold the two Sandusky ones and now Mark's in contract to sell the Springfield one. And then we bought the one in Hocking Hills and I just bought the one in Columbus. My agenda for January is to sit down with my admin and we're going to upgrade my spreadsheet and get all of the correct numbers on there because I haven't taken the time to do that in the last 8 weeks. And that's when we've done most of these deals. And so I'm going to update my spreadsheet, but mine's on an Excel spreadsheet. And the reason I like to keep that current at least quarterly, and again, I don't sit down every week and, you know, adjust my numbers, but I do like to keep it current quarterly, which has my loans, my payoff amounts, the cost of the insurance, the cost of the taxes. It has all of that on a spreadsheet because when I'm ready, when I find a property, as you well know, when you finally find one, you oftentimes don't have time if you're making an offer to really do your due diligence. And so you like to have that spreadsheet so that you can look at the overall portfolio, but also so you have something to turn into a lender. Because that's the first question they're going to ask is what properties do you currently have? What is your income? What, you know, have you filed, you know, your Schedule E's for at least 2 years where you can count that rental income? So there's all kinds of information that you need that's just so handy to have it right there on a spreadsheet. So I try to update mine quarterly. So it's on my agenda for January. Does that help?
No, I was hoping you said, yes, I have a spreadsheet that I use that analyzes things and I'll share it with you. You just plug in a few numbers here and it'll tell you if it's a good deal or not.
Well, now go to Bigger Pockets because Bigger Pockets may very well have some tools there under Bigger Pockets that where you could analyze a deal on a whole portfolio. I personally just have my personal properties on my own Excel spreadsheet. And again, for me, it definitely has to have a cash flow from the very beginning because of where we are in our retirement. For example, the one we just bought in Hocking Hills, they asked 55 for it. It's an acre and a half with the single wide, and they've added this nice great big addition onto the single wide. It's a nice cute little property, and everything's real clean, and it's, you know, it's livable now. We want to update it, but, you know, if we were renting it long term, we could just go in and clean it up and rent it, and people would line up to rent that. But we want to do a short term on it. So we want to upgrade the finishes, make it look really nice so that we can get a little bit better rate out of a short term rental for that one. And we determined that the property just the land it was on, because remember, a mobile home not on a foundation is titled like a car, and only the land is the real estate. And we paid what the real estate was worth. So we basically got the structure for free, and it's livable. You know, I mean, if we didn't do anything but just go in and mop the floors and give it a coat of paint, we could rent it, you know, January 1. It's rentable just the way it is. Now, there's things, like I said, that we want to do, but we wouldn't have to. And so we got a really good value in that way. So what we choose to put into it is, again, is totally incidental, because we can put as much or as little into the actual structure that we want, because we got our value on what it was appraised for just in the real property itself. And so those are kind of the kind of deals that I'm looking for. And it's the same with the condo that we bought in Columbus. I bought right on the edge of Reynoldsburg and Whitehall, and right there off of Livingston. And the appraisal actually came in high on what we paid. I paid 59 and the appraisal came in at 69. And so, again, I have immediate $10,000 equity in that property as soon as I signed the closing paper. Excuse me. So anyway, so that's, I guess that's the point on where I am, is I just think your numbers are too far apart on this deal. And tell David, I think he's a really nice guy, but he really doesn't owe anything to the seller at this point. I think it's an education for the seller as well, because again, the realtor probably said, oh yeah, you'll get that all day long, put it on the market, you know? So yeah. I think things are adjusting, and I think there's probably a better investment deal for you. Unless you're in love with that house.
No, it's a good house in a good location, but I don't really love it. I think it would do well. It would be a nice addition to our portfolio. It's kind of a little bit of a step up from the first few houses that we bought.
Okay.
You know, the first ones we bought was off market. It's a duplex in Lancaster on another side of town, but it just is kind of blah looking. This one, once it gets sited and a roof, would be a very nice looking place.
Well, again, I just think the numbers have to work for you. And I just don't think they do at that appraisal. And you're kind of stuck with that appraisal, don't quote me, but 6 months maybe?
Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, I think everybody is stuck with that one for about 6 months.
So, cash out refi that we're doing, that the appraisal came in low, Kyle actually is trying to appeal that, because he thought it was too low also. So he decided he was going to try to help us out and try to appeal it. So he submitted an appeal today, whatever that means. Okay. I mean, I know what an appeal is, but I don't know what the process is or how long that takes.
Yeah, part of the process is his comps. And since he is a realtor, his comps mean something. And so that's part of the appeal process, is showing that houses in that area that are just like that one sold for much more, and therefore yours ought to be appraised for closer to what the other one sold for. So again, you can wait and see. If it were me, I wouldn't stop looking, but I would probably keep an eye on that one that you like, you know, that the appraisal came in $30,000 less. I would probably keep an eye on that one, because in 6 months, either the seller is going to put it back on the market at a closer price point to match the appraisal, because if it didn't appraise for you, it's not going to appraise for anyone else either, you know. And then I would keep an eye to revisit it. If it's still on the market in 6 months, you might be able to strike a deal again, depending on where you are and whether you've moved on, or you know, you may have found something else by then. But
right.
But again, real estate's a long game. And again, it's not a bad deal, even with that spread, if you had enough time.
Right.
Like you said, in 15 years, it'd be a great deal.
Elise, my advice to you is if you want to use your equity in your current house for your next loan, start your refinance process before you find that next house.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I definitely was like, you know, if I'm going to do anything, the first thing I was going to do was make sure that I'm prepared. I know when I started the journey just to this first house, definitely was not as super as prepared as I could have been. But, you know, like that learning experience and, you know, now that I have that under my belt, you know, do things a little bit differently, try us a different way. So I appreciate that.
Well, yeah. And what I hear Tammy saying is if you can refi now, what that's going to do is it's going to loosen up your FHA availability. So
you'll have the cash ready when you need it. We're trying to do a cash out refi and the purchase of the next property at the same time. And they're both going ridiculously slowly. It's been 2 months and I still don't have the money from my cash out refi yet to use for my down payment.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Definitely makes sense. I will definitely look into that because if I'm going to move out of here and try and just probably just get this rented because it is ready to go. And, you know, even the appraisal, if someone comes in and they look at, you know, that thing with the basement and they're like, okay, I'm going to know that.
Now,
okay.
Keep in mind, you've already passed an appraisal for an FHA, which is a lot stricter than a bank needs an appraisal to be for a conventional.
Okay.
And so I don't think you'll have any problem going from an FHA to a conventional loan.
And that's still under the same umbrella as it's a cash out and refinance. And it would be a little bit more of a loan, but I would get the money back out of it and I would be able to hold that money for the down payment. Am I understanding that correctly? Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. So let's just use some real numbers. What did you pay for the duplex?
$231,555.
Okay. We're just going to round that off to $232,000. Now again, I'm just making this up because I'm not an appraiser, but let's see, what would 10% be? 20%. I'm sorry. 232 and 20% is 46. I don't know if your value has increased by 46. Now you paid 232. How much did you put down?
So I had to go over because they were asking, you know, the way we're asking 210. I put down 18,000 something.
Okay. So you already have 18 in equity in the house.
Okay.
So your payoff might be somewhere around 214.
Okay.
And then you've paid on it for not a year yet. Or yes, a year because you bought it in November. So you've paid on it for a year. So I'm just guessing because you're going to pay mostly interest your first year. So let's say your payoff is 210.
Okay.
And again, I'm just making up numbers because I don't see your numbers. So let's just say, for example's sake, that your payoff is 210. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say, since you paid 232, let's say that an appraisal comes in and let's say that it just appraises you at 232, which is what you started with.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's 232 and your payoff is 210, you've got 22,000 in cash in that property. And usually a bank will let you take 80% of that.
Okay.
And so if you had 22,000 and 80% of that's going to be 17,000. So you might be able, because remember you said you put 18 into it.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to pull out 18 to 20,000 depending on your appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could pull that out, see, now you've got your down payment for another house.
Mm-hmm. And all of that for the cost of obviously the appraisal, but basically I'm really just putting this back into another loan. So yeah, it's going to say it's going to restart my 30 years, but I get the cash back that I pretty much have put in or down paymented into it. And
you're going to leverage the cash back out of it and put it into another note, but then your renters are going to buy you that house. And, and my guess is that, am I correct? You weren't putting very much in it to make up the difference.
No, I think 170 is what I've been paying.
And so see, as soon as you get another renter that's going to pay full rent for your half, they're going to make your payment for you and you're going to get some cash in your income. So it's going to profit. When I say cash flow, I don't mean just to cover itself. I mean, it's going to cover all of its own costs and give you some cash every month. So duplex is going to cash flow immediately and you'll get your money back out to put as a down payment toward another house.
Yeah. Well, look who's going to be looking for a refinance. Yes.
But again, make sure your numbers work, you know, make sure it's worth it to you to do that, because the other option is to don't touch that loan at all and go get a different kind of loan for your new house. I'm just saying that the best rate out there is an FHA, the lowest down payment and the best rate for you at your age is an FHA loan. And the only thing is that you have to get rid of the FHA loan on your investment property if you want to use an FHA again.
Absolutely.
You have to somehow refinance the one you're in to get your availability to do an FHA back so that you can use the FHA program a second time.
Gotcha. Well, one thing I did want to ask is, well, you know, honestly, the best thing for me will probably be to refinance because, you know, it took me that 2 years to save up all that money to be able to do this in the first place. And I've been wanting to leverage this. And if that's the way I can do it. And since my boyfriend is, you know, interested in it, you know, he has a FHA as well. He hasn't touched anything. He's just, you know, whatever. And if that's what we decide to do, then that's what we decide to do. But, and we're also, it's because we're not married that would, you know, be something possible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you wanted to use, if he does not have an FHA, you could actually use his availability to get an FHA loan and leave yours alone.
Yeah.
So you have options.
Definitely. And I appreciate that we talk through these options because I have been racking my brain trying to figure out what in the world I was going to do with this thing.
I get it. I get it. It's all good. And with this first one being in your name and you having the FHA there, you always have that to fall back on. If you ever, you know, decided you wanted to move back in, that's your property. You can, all you have to do after a period of time is with 30-day notice, you can move into either unit.
Right. Right.
I like options.
Always. Always.
All right. Any other questions or comments before we go? I can't believe we've been on already for an hour. It's already 3:09. Tammy, do you feel good about walking away from this one? I know that's what you guys had decided, but now you're saying David's a little hesitant.
Well, I think it's what's best is to walk away.
Yeah. I think the it's too big of a spread. Yeah. Heck, I spend $50,000 on a whole property and you guys have a $50,000 spread between the low appraisal and the repairs that need done.
Yeah. Plus the other property that came in low, you know, for the cash out refinance, it came in at $5,000 less than we originally paid for it before our repairs on that property. So.
Okay. So that spreads even more than 5,000 by the time you count the repairs.
Yeah. It's 45,000 on that one.
Yeah. So I get it.
It's starting to all add up.
No, I think there's better options for you out there because the whole objective is to get to your freedom number, and your freedom number is the profit cash flow. It's not just the cost of these properties. It's the cash flow they generate in addition to their cost. that you can actually use to travel on or live on or buy your new car on or whatever it is that you want to do with the money. But that's your freedom number. And that's what we're trying to get to, is a freedom number for ourselves.
Well, we're all new. We'll get there eventually.
And again, it's, you know, time is your friend in all of this. Real estate's the long game. I get it, but it's so worth it. When you finally get 10 or 15 years under your belt, and then you measure backward and you see how far you've come, you're like, wow, wished I would have done more of that then. But, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. We all wish we would have done more of that back then. So it's all good. Good, better, and best. There's no bad real estate deals. They're all just good, better, and best. All right, guys, thanks for being with me today, and we will see you on the other end. We're flying home. I'm still at the condo. You can see behind me, I'm at the condo in Sarasota, and I'll be flying home on Thursday to spend Christmas with the kids. So our next call, I will be back in the Columbus area. So I'll see you on the other end.
All right. See you later.
All right. See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.